Hey, welcome back, everybody. It's time once again to grab your gear and take to the road as we follow the Dulner family and their all-over-the-map adventures in search of their forever home. Come in, Domeners. Where can we find you today? Here we're tuning the radio dial. Caitlin and Michael Domner, are you there?
We are here in beautiful San Carlos de Bariloche of Argentina.
And you actually sound good. You don't sound like you're on a... I don't hear the static and the sound of being out on the extreme edge of the planet here somewhere. You sound like you're in civilization.
We are in the beautiful San Carlos de Bariloche, Argentina. And yeah, it's a beautiful little mountain resort. They styled themselves into, it feels like an alpine thing you might find in Bavaria, between the German immigrants and a desire to position themselves as an alpine ski resort community. It looks like we walked into Eastern Europe in a lot of respects.
Yeah, a lot of the other places that we were in Argentina, Buenos Aires and Mendoza, everywhere that we mentioned that we were going to Bariloche, all of the Argentinians were got very excited and told us, "Oh, Bariloche is beautiful." So that's always a good sign when the air quotes locals say that that's the best place in their country. So we have found so far that it is. We absolutely love it. I would say. It's easily top two, maybe Caitlin was saying this may even be her favorite stop yet that we've had.
Wow.
Yeah. It's kind of like Lake Tahoe. If you've ever been to Lake Tahoe, like sure. Deep blue lakes, really tall mountains, covered in forests, but it's more it's the lake region. So there's dozens of lakes, that are just as beautiful as Lake Tahoe with mountains that are taller. We just came across an ancient volcano, that is crusted with these like 100-foot glaciers at the top.
Oh, wow.
And then they just spill waterfalls down into the base of the caldera. And you get this kind of jade turquoise pool at the bottom. And it was like a magical experience being there.
Yeah, it was amazing.
So the only thing wrong with this picture-perfect postcard is it's in Argentina, as we discovered last week. Oops, one of the things that was missing on the bucket list is we got to have a place that's politically stable and got some economic opportunities and not either an authoritarian state or a chaotic socialist state or one extreme in the other here. That never entered into the equation before. You were just looking for the postcard. You had a postcard in your hand and you were trying to find that place. You found it.
Yeah, I think at the risk or trying to avoid slipping back into our political commentary of last week, I think that it really does just kind of drive that point home. I mean, the place is gorgeous. Everybody that we've met here is very friendly, helpful.
Many of them speak English.
A lot of them speak English, which is great. And probably I think one of the other reasons why I feel so nice now is literally everything that we do feels like it's half price because of the foreign currency exchange rate.
Wow.
Which is another reason why it doesn't make a great forever home is because of that kind of instability in their currency. But it really is. It's a beautiful place to visit. I just with the political climate here, it would be very. I don't know. We would have to be enticed. Pretty greatly to make this our forever home.
I could see us having a summer home here.
Yeah,
well, I guess it would be our winter home.
Yeah, right.
Because it's summer down here. So if wherever our forever home ends up, we could have a lake home down here that we come to for Thanksgiving to February and just relax on the beaches of Bariloche.
Well, it proves that it takes more than this fairy tale to make the dream come true. There are some economic and political realities that have to enter into it because you are, you're Americans, and more specifically, you're entrepreneurial Californians, you're independent-minded Californians, and it's hard for us to accept, well, you can't do that here, or we don't do that here, or we won't do that here. All of those things are features that I guess you find in a lot of countries around the world that I didn't expect would bother me or I'd care one way or another, except you're not just there to visit. You're talking about living there.
Yeah, I don't know that we could start a business here. We would have to maintain our U.S. entity, our U.S. entities and identities, and kind of do business in U.S. dollars and then ship ourselves U.S. cash. Would probably be the way to pull it off down here. But even still, not sure what that would look like from a taxation perspective and all those different things. So we haven't done that much research. But yeah, so far, I think this is at the top of the list from the postcard perspective, as you pointed out.
Is any of this influenced by, we're going to raise our children here too? What kind of values, what kind of society, what kind of cultural norm? We've talked about this, you know, maybe California is too me oriented and acquiring and now and consumerism and all the things that kids are caught up with here in Southern California. And so, yeah, we love the idea of community and being in touch with the world and being in touch, helping each other. And you find that probably more in these other countries, somewhat by necessity, you said, because they've got to help each other to get through the day.
I think it's hard to, that's an aspect of it that's really hard to judge. Like where, we can kind of get a feeling, from being here for a short period of time. But that's really hard to investigate about a location, right? We can do our, Google search and find out about the government. We can find out about the currency. We can find out about the laws. Right. But really that kind of ideology and what's the pervading sense of how they raise children and right. what values do they instill, it's really tough to get that feeling. We've been here for 6 days now, and I don't know that I would say that I have a really good feel for that.
I'll give you an interesting analogy. Years ago on one of our other shows, we had a woman who wrote a book about her experience. Similar California escape. Let's go find paradise. And for them, they investigated and thought it would be the country of Belize, the only other country I've been to outside of the U.S. And it is pictured beautiful. You pass through that area in Guatemala and everything down by the ocean. And they were going to start a business remotely and they moved their family down there. And wouldn't this be paradise? And they found that it was so much of a paradise. Maybe I'm overstating this to sound like an ugly American, but there was kind of a laziness that pervaded at this beach vibe. Let's just do it tomorrow. Let's go out and sit by the beach and let's have a drink. She found it very discomforting. Her husband fell into this trap, stopped working. Her kids stopped working. Everybody just kind of went down to the beach and hung out until they burned through their money. And then it was like, oops, we're in trouble. And she really talked about that at length, that they weren't ready for that. It's one thing to be on vacation and be laid back. It's another thing to live laid back like that.
Yeah, we actually had that that almost exact conversation when we were in Belize. Mm-hmm. Actually, it's kind of a, for some reason, and I may be overstating kind of generalizations, but it's kind of like an island culture, I right. feel like, from the places that we've been to. We've been to Hawaii, Belize, Key West, and there is that Costa Rica wasn't an island, but it really is just kind of that I don't know,
Margaritaville. Manana, right? Let's make another margarita and we'll worry about it tomorrow here. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right. And it's not just the vacationers that have that. It really is a local mentality that pervades in our experience. I mean, I'm sure that there are wonderful, hardworking islanders as well, but kind of from our general sense of the places that we've been, that is kind of a sense that we felt.
And I feel like you have an advantage when you do live in paradise. Like, and we were in Hawaii, and we're like, it would be impossible to starve in Hawaii. Like, there are goats and chickens and pigs just running wild, and anybody can fish from the shores, and there's fruit literally growing off every tree. And like the entire island was designed to be a garden paradise for humans. Right. And so it's, what is the point of working? Right. I think is what they would probably say is like, yeah, I don't need to work hard. Like the land takes care of me. I get to hang out with my buddies. I do as much work as I need to, but I work to live. I don't live to work.
Yes.
And I think that would be their argument is like, they would probably say that they've got their priorities straight. Like they're just enjoying life, which is what the whole point of life is. And it's you guys who are confused and grow up in those cold climates where you have to work hard to save up for winter, you crazy little ants, in order to survive. But that's not necessary when you live in
perfect
conditions year round, you know?
I get it. And my father thought the same thing. He went to Fiji once on a trip and he thought, I've never seen a lazy group of people. They just, because you can, again, they don't have to work. The food is everywhere. You can fish, you can get the fruits right off the trees. Yeah. And so it creates this kind of this attitude of, let's do nothing but lay around and have another beer and just, you know, watch the world pass by. And for us as Americans, that's horrifying. As good,
with a Protestant heritage from northern climates,
hard work is good for its own sake. Yeah, right.
Right, exactly. That was what my father felt. You just got up and you worked, even if you didn't have to work. You just, good work is good for you, toughens you, hardens you, makes you appreciate things.
I don't think we did an episode when we were in Ambergris Key in Belize, but we were on the island and we were thinking about you and starting the podcast at that point. And we said, this could be a forever home, but only after we retire. And I kind of feel that way about every island I've been on. Like islands are beautiful retirement places when you have done your work, you've made your contribution, and you just want to relax and enjoy life. Right. Islands are perfect for that. But for us, as high energy, high octane achiever mentality as we are, like, we would be crazy. We circled the island probably three times within the first 48 hours. And we're like, all right, hamster wheels.
I had the same feeling. I was on Ambergris Cay and we stayed there for a couple of days and we were supposed to stay. My buddy and I were supposed to stay for like the rest of the week. And we just got island fever. We had to get off. I'd seen the whole island. We'd done the whole thing. Now what? I got to see what's over the next hill. And that's when we jumped in a back in a plane, got up in the mainland, took a Jeep and drove up into the highlands to see the Mayan ruins on the Guatemalan border. And I thought, you know, what's wrong with this picture here? What's wrong with it is it's too laid back. It's too lazy.
Yeah.
I can't live that life. I wasn't programmed to live that life.
Yep.
Well, all right. So you found this a perfect paradise, but there's an urge to go on. Where do you go on from here then? How do you top paradise? You found the postcard. Ta-da, there it is.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. I don't know how the other factors play in if we find somewhere this beautiful and this exactly.
Yeah, and I was just going to say we had anticipated finding this, but we had anticipated finding it on the west side of the Andes. We had identified Chile as geographically perfect for us even before we started. The east side of the Andes, we're technically on the dry side right now. That Argentina is significantly less precipitation than Chilean side.
And if you go east for an hour, like, you're in the desert. Like, it's much more arid here than it will be on the Chilean side.
Right.
Yeah. So we're going to go around the Cape and head back north on the Chilean side. And we'll have about 6 weeks after the Antarctica cruise to explore the mirror image of this location over on the Chile side.
And I think I've told you that I think people have gathered enough that I'm certainly an armchair traveler. I read a lot about travel and I read all the time the undiscovered magic of southern Chile or however you say it, that it's incredible mountains and incredible vistas and it's relatively inexpensive. It's relatively undiscovered and it's just spectacular everywhere you go. And so I will, too, curiously see how you react to that. I never heard of the Argentinian side as being paradise. I always hear about it on the other side there. What I also marveled is before we're getting the show ready, we're talking about this is it. This is the postcard you've been looking for. It has checks all the things. It's alpine. It's mountainous. It's spectacular. It's blue. It's clear. It's friendly. They speak English. It looks like out of a casting movie here. And then Michael said, but maybe it's a little more snow than I want to get. I thought, boy, that's us Californian snobs. I don't know. We're always endlessly arguing. Is Temecula better than San Diego? I don't know. It's a little too much cold for me. They're a little too much. It's like the Three Bears. I don't know. This one's a little too hot, a little too cold. And I thought people listening to this are going to go, oh, get over it, guys. Okay. So you get two more days of rain than you want or something here. And we're looking for perfection. Absolutely just right.
Enjoyed skiing more. This is a ski paradise in the winter, so it might just be a matter of us accommodating, adapting, like, our habits to the weather as opposed to finding the place where the weather suits us. That's another consideration.
Yeah. And when the weather suits you, when is perfect? When is it just right? When is it the temperature absolutely? It's like arguing, sitting in a home, dialing up the air conditioner or the heat. Is that hot enough? Is that coming on just a little bit more, a little bit less? And oh, I want a little humidity. And we're just micromanaging this down to its absolute perfection here. And I think, who does that in the real world? The real world, they just, this is it. You just adapt. It's snowing today. It's raining today. Get over it.
Right. And it's funny, we're for the kids, we've been doing lots of road trips around Bariloche because we rented a car and we've been listening to T.H. White's Sword in the Stone. Mm. And one of the things he mentions is that back in merry old England, the weather was always perfect. There were four beautiful hot months in the summer, two gloriously snow-filled months in the winter when the snow fell perfectly and you could frolic about. And like that was the magic of Arthurian Camelot was perfect weather at all times. It cracked me up that
all that is good PR for bad climates here. Oh yes, this is it's a good thing it's snowing. It's a good thing it's hot and miserable in the summer. No, it's not. That was the myth I grew up in the Midwest. I bought, like most of my friends and relatives, that this was a wonderful place, and culturally there was a lot to be said about it. You know, all the values that I have, I got from this Midwest, you know, don't brag, don't bully, be honest, be hardworking, you know, all these things driven into you, you know, and it was very communal. There was family, there were communities, everybody took care of each other. It all felt like that kind of vibe until it didn't, until it felt like it was choking me, that everybody knew what you were doing and you couldn't do anything out of what was already prescribed for you. And then I started going to other places and I said, this weather sucks. Why would anybody live here? In the summer, it's hot and humid and buggy. In the winter, it's frozen cold. In the spring, you have floods and tornadoes. You get a month or two that is decent, and the rest of it, it's miserable. And I thought, why would anybody stay there? But we told ourselves the beauty of winter and the joy of summer. And I don't know. You know, I guess you can sell yourself on anything.
I think that's the nature of humanity, is we tell our legends to reinforce our values. Yes. And if you want people to stay, you tell the stories that will do that. I was thinking, as we're talking about like myths and fairy tales, Michael lived out his very own tall tale here in Bariloche. He took Cora out in a one-man canoe. She was sitting on the back and he was on the kayak. Excuse me.
Yes.
I'm coming back down with Bradley. We just got snacks. We're going to have a picnic on the shores of the lake. And I hear Cora screaming, "We caught a fish! We caught a fish! Our bare hands. And I was like laughing. I was like, that's so funny. Like I imagine them like grabbing a minnow and then letting it go. Yeah. And I like come up and I have the video camera rolling. So there's actual proof of this. They went out without a fishing pole and came back with a 28-inch trout that weighed 5 pounds. And Michael literally just lifted it out of the water while they were on their kayaks.
Reached in and grabbed it by its tail,
Talk about laid-back life. The fish even are laid-back. Oh, they just let you go grab them.
He offered himself to us.
Yeah, like in a Disney fairy tale. I offer myself to you here, you know. I can serve you. Wow. You know, that is that's every man's fairy tale. I am mad. I just walk into the jungle and I conquer and I take. And I am.
I know, I was like, Michael, I think your spirit animal is the grizzly bear from now on.
Yes. Right. Oh my goodness. Well, you know, this is amazing. It's an amazing revelation because it's more than just the postcard. I guess we're looking for, and yet we all think we're just looking for the postcard. When I came west, young man, I was just looking for better weather and beautiful women. You know, the blondes that I saw forever bouncing on the beaches here in Baywatch or whatever. That was my driving motivation, and to get away from what I thought was the structure and the depressing drabness of the Midwest in every way, shape, or form. I was looking for the excitement of California. Now you're looking for the fairy tale image of mountain streams and idyllic mountains and Hansel and Gretel walking down the lane hand in hand. And it'll be interesting to see as you go to other places like this, if you want to stay or you want to go.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of my interesting, like, hesitation almost, is we've been traveling and we will be traveling, and we're talking about taking a sabbatical back in California for a couple months and extending the trip for a couple of years. And just what would it be like to just live as nomads for a while? And it made me wonder, like, the idea of staying still and staying in one place, like, is that going to feel weird? I thought I was going to get my itchiness out and my travel lust out. And and then, right, once I've sown my wild oats around the world, not really. then I'll be ready to settle down and commit to a piece of land. And that's going to be our forever home. But there's a part of me at this stage in our journey wondering, like, maybe we're just not suited for forever homes. Like, maybe the Gypsy's Caravan is the way for us. You know?
Well, it's interesting. There's a book. What's the name of it? I can't think of it right now. But a gentleman kind of had a hedge fund, sold it, retired, Adventure Capitalist. That's the name of it. And he did a road trip. He actually first did a motorcycle trip around the world. Wow. And then in 2000, he did a road trip in a car. So he suited out this vehicle kind of as an overland vehicle, towed a trailer behind him, and literally drove around the world, something like 80,000 miles or something like that. Wow. And it took him, about 2 years. Mm-hmm. But when he went back home after all these trips, he went through like 3 months, he said, of almost a depression, like on the road. Yeah. There's the withdrawals. There's a sense of what's next? What am I going to do? Where am I going tomorrow? And once he went back home, there was nothing. It was,
I had that quiet, same
experience. He didn't have anything to do on the agenda. It was just, exactly. He literally went through a depression.
I've had the same experience. I've had the same experience on a couple of trips. And the further out I went and the longer I went, the longer it took to get over that. There was a hangover effect. And, I through the years, have thought about it. And I think that the thing I like about being on the road is that constant adventure. There's a constant push to see what's over the next hill, the next mountain, down the road to the next town. And it sort of gives you a purpose every day. I've got to go from here to there. And you might wait a few days, but then you're getting ready to go to the next one and the next one. So there's a constant purpose and plan. When you're sitting at home, wherever home is, there is no place to go tomorrow except where you've been already. So there's no sense of adventure or wonder, and there is a sense of sameness. And a sense, a lack of, I mean, that's why you try and fill it with family and business and other things, but just the community. Done this. I've gone around. We've had people we do this show about electric bikes, and people say one of the things I like about an electric bike is that it lets them go further than their usual bike path. Because usually you can only ride the bike. I don't go up this hill. I don't go any further than this because I get tired. So you had to fall into the same little track that you ride your bike all the time. And it's like going around a track. And whereas an electric bike gives you can go 100 miles or 50 miles or something. So it gives you a sense of I can go anywhere. And is that what we're really looking for? Or does that burn out and being on the road? You've had that opposite experience where you had to just stop already and just your body's burned out. I can't see one more World Heritage site after another here. My brain can't absorb it. My stomach can't absorb it. My body can't absorb it.
Something that that really struck me, I think it was yesterday, I just went to a coffee shop and sat down and was drinking coffee, and it felt almost like a surreal experience for me. Like I was sitting back watching all these people coming in and realizing that they're living their normal lives here in Bariloche. They have a home here. They work here, go to work from 8 to 5, go home. I mean, just normal everyday life.
Every day they go out and grab a fish and bring it home. This is just a normal experience.
but it kind of made me feel like kind of apart from society, like just this sense of like, that's not how I'm living my life. I'm not going to work from 8 to 5 and then going home and making dinner and like going to bed and waking up the next day and doing it all over again. It made me feel kind of this sense of just being different from society in general. It was really an interesting feeling to go through and to think through what it was that gave me that. And it really is just, living our life so differently from what is normal. In the U.S., I'm sure it's going to be strange to go back to Apple Valley, even though we're only going to be there for a couple of weeks, and just see everybody that we saw.
Hey, how you been? And to them, nothing has changed. It's just been, exactly, you were gone. What? How long? It's like you left yesterday. Yeah.
And to think, you know, that they've woken up every single morning in between there, went to work just like they have for the last 10 years. And this last 6 months hasn't been anything different for them. And to think of how it's changed my perspective. And it just made me feel like I was apart from society, which was a weird feeling.
Yeah, I had kind of my own similar or parallel experience to that, because somebody asked me, well, what's your dream life? Like, what would you change about your life to make it perfect? And I was like, nothing. I'm traveling the world with the love of my life and three healthy children. And we're homeschooling them and educating them the way we think that they should be raised, and getting to see the most beautiful, historically significant places of the world. I'm like, we are living what most people would say is the dream.
Right.
And I'm like, so what's chapter two? Like, how do you, like, when we end this living the dream, like, how do we possibly
beat this, right?
Like, what could possibly be next that's better than the life we're currently living? It's just, it was a hard moment for me to realize, like, we've got this kind of blissful, exhausting, but blissful experience planned for a couple of years. And then what? And I'm like, what? I don't yet see the other side yet.
I think too, a part of that is just recognizing, I mean, like, sure, we could say it's not going to be as glorious or it's not going to be as good, but it's going to be different. Like, and that in itself is going to make it good.
Yeah.
I think that Caitlin and I both have, that's one of our strong values is seeing different things and having different experiences. So after being on the road for a few years, I'm sure that just being in one place, like, I don't think, I can't imagine us allowing it to be boring as from our perspective, right? So some people couldn't imagine doing what we're doing because they would hate it. Right. So everybody has their own dream ideal of what they want to be doing. So yeah.
So let me throw this analogy out. I always wonder. When I dated furiously. I don't think I ever went out with anybody for more than a month or something, because I was always, not that they were bad or whatever, but that was fine. That was fun. They introduced me to something. Now what else? Who else is there? What else to try? So I was always like a little bee flying from flower to flower here, trying everything here. And then at some point that just became, oh, I've been there and I've done that. And I've had this conversation before. And now at some point you sort of sowed your wild oats, as you said, you tried everything you wanted to try. And then it's time to pick. And then it's time to try what that's like, to stick with something, to do it day after day, to not keep it boring, to have be grounded in something and connected to something. Because after a while, you don't feel, you know, the problem with endlessly dating is there are those times when you want to feel connected, holidays or you're sick or something, and there's nobody there. You know, you realize you're completely alone. You're like, oh, this is horrible. And then suddenly you want a connection and consistency and all that sameness. There are times when that just seems wonderful. when you have kids.
So I guess what I'm hearing from you, Paul, is that we haven't traveled enough yet. There will be a moment where boring is no longer boring.
Yeah, boring sameness is good.
Sameness sounds refreshing.
The Bible says it, right? There's a season for everything. There's a season for reaping. Really? There's a season for harvesting. So there's a sowing and reaping.
Harvesting, sowing. All you Bible scholars, send your notes to Michael. Don't send them here. But I think that's true. I'll give you another take on it. So years ago, I came to Hollywood in my 20s, and I loved the craziness and the insaneness of it. And I worked in the entertainment industry, and every day is different. You never knew what projects didn't last. Nothing lasts. Relationships didn't last. Somebody asked me what my net worth was. I'm like 30, and I realized I had no net worth. I rented everything. I rented my house. I rented my car. I worked temporarily on job to job. I probably rented my girlfriends. everything was just a temporary little thing here. It was that gypsy kind of existence. And that's when I started to say, well, is that all there is? I wanted something. Yeah. I wanted my own house. I wanted my own family. I wanted my own kids. I wanted a consistent job or that I could build and grow or something. I got married and suddenly we're looking to raise a family, and we drove from Hollywood down to Orange County, which I thought was behind the orange curtain, the epitome of everything I left in the Midwest, bland, boring sameness. And when I first came to Orange County in the 20s, I looked around at this master planned community and I said, what a massive disaster. It all looks the same. It's all perfectly laid out. Who would live here? And then suddenly I come down 10 years later and we're looking to plant a little nest. And I said, look, honey, it's all so safe and it's all so similar and it all looks. And I said, wait a minute. I had this conversation, but I came to a different conclusion. Why is boring and consistent and perfectly planned appealing to me now here? I think it does run through different things. So I wonder, as the river of your life runs along here, will you run up against the spot and say, maybe that's what the pioneers did coming across the country. Enough. This'll do right now. This is it. My plot of land. I plant my flag here. So maybe it isn't important where you end up. It's just, it's where the, when the time is right.
Yeah. I liked Michael's idea of like, there's a season for everything. And right now we're in the season for exploration and travel and adventure. And there will come a season for settling down and putting down roots and committing to a community and making that home. I like that idea.
Well, we look forward to riding along and seeing as right now you're in the exciting exploration phase here. At what point will that end? Or maybe it never ends. Maybe your forever home is to forever be on the road. That's a wild idea. Not many choose that. Maybe you find a way to live the Peter Pan existence. Never going to grow up. We're always going to just keep being kids and going here.
Interesting perspective on that, I think, is like the people who live that lifestyle are typically kind of vilified, right? I mean, you look at gypsies, you look
persecuted.
Yeah, it's kind of a... Because, and I think it's for that same reason that I felt like apart from what I was experiencing in the coffee shop, it's just the different, the unknown has always been kind of the bad. And that's,
it goes back to our, we tell the stories that reinforce the values that we want to perpetuate.
Absolutely.
And so you don't want your kids to run off and join the gypsy caravan. You want them to stay and plow and farm. And so you have to make the nomads.
The bad guys.
Yeah,
exactly. Everybody joined the circus, who'd stay home?
Yeah. Right. Who'd raise the kids?
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. It's an interesting concept.
Well, I think this is the flip side too. First, there was kind of the political economic awakening. Oh, it can't just look like a fairy tale. It's got to function as well here. And function is important. How it functions, how it feels, what the values are. And today it's more about the myths we tell ourselves about these very...
The social side of it as opposed to the economic side.
Right, exactly. It isn't just how it looks, it's how it feels and where you're ready. Are you really ready to put down roots? Are you going to follow the paradigm or maybe never put down roots? And is that good or bad? I don't know. You're still in the figuring it out stage as you are all over the map on this one. Well, take us out. Any final thoughts? I think you came up with some good ones already here. Any final thoughts? Where do you head? When do we get to Antarctica? That's got to be one of the ultimate bucket list kinds of.
Next week we will be boarding the ship for Antarctica. Wow. Next Wednesday. So we'll have to figure that out and make sure we connect with you. But
we'll be in Ushuaia, the southernmost city in the world.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you could stop and find somebody who lives there or who lives, you know, it's like the Sherpas that live on the Himalaya mountains and take people up. For them, this is just their normal activity. For us, it's wow, once in a lifetime do you go to the Himalayas, you go to Antarctica. I wonder why they live there. Was it just they were born there? Did any of them choose to go there? Because at the extremes, who would live at the extreme edges of the planet and the Himalayan mountains in on South America in the middle of African jungle or something here? These extreme outliers, you're going to one of them here that few of us will ever see. You're going to see. There are people that see this every day. What is it about that that keeps them there or that brought them there? That would be interesting to ask around, to ask some of the locals there. you know, what's it like to live here? Because it's hard to imagine that you're going to decide you're going to come back after this experience and say, Paul, we found it's Antarctica. It's 80 degrees right. below zero, 8 months out of the year. This is paradise. This is where we're going to raise our kids. This is where we're going to plant the flag. We're, what's his name? Amundsen or whatever, the guy at the South Pole, you know, plant, trek there to plant the flag. And this is it here and no farther. We're making our home in some extreme. We're going to be in the middle of the Kalahari Desert. We're going to be on the top of Mount Everest. This is where we're going to live. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, that doesn't sound likely. We're not emperor penguins.
Well, we never know. We're going to paddle along and see how you react to this. Is this just a bucket list or is this any aspect of foreverness to it here? Or maybe the journey is the forever thing. That's the real question as you go forward. Is the journey itself, you know, they always say it's not about the destination, it's about the journey. Is life just an endless journey, or is there a destination of time to plant your flag, to plant your feet, to plant your crop, to plant your seeds and grow roots and stay in one place and connect to that place? That would be interesting to find out. You know, I'll give you one last thought, and just you making me think of all these philosophical points. Maybe I'll give the philosophical outtake here.
Go for it.
All right. So I grew up in the Midwest, couldn't wait to hell to get away from it. And a couple of years later, had to go back to a funeral. And my cousins who stayed behind live in a little tiny farm in the middle of nowhere in rural Minnesota. They chose to buy this little plant of land right out of college and to move to this community, become teachers there, and they've planted. And it's clear, I don't think it was clear to them when they did this, but they've planted now generations of people there. Their kids are never going to leave. Their grandkids are never going to leave. This is the family farm. This is the community that they're all going to be raised in. And as they walked me around, because they've lived there now for like 50 years, this is where we were born. This is where the husband died. And he's literally like a half, 50 feet off of the farm in the little cemetery out there where everybody's born. And this connection to the dirt, this connection to the land created, they didn't know when they bought this place, but it took a hold of them, and it took a hold of their children and probably for generations to come. I've never felt a connection to dirt or to a plot of land or to a house. And I sort of envied it. There was a certain connection there that I've never felt before. That's what I fled. I didn't want to be bound and tied to the land and tied to the place. I wanted to be free. At some point, you come back and say, there is something about that connection that is kind of appealing. I wonder if you'll ever discover that feeling or ever get there. Well, that's going to take us out. I think that's going to be the episode here for the week. Thanks for tuning along and riding along on the forever journey of the Domner family as they go all over the map. Right here in Orange County's only community radio station, OCTalkRadio.net.